Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. Coming back to you today with a very serious and sometimes sad topic. September. It's September already. Good Lord. And September has a double meaning for me and for many of you. It's time to promote National Suicide Prevention Month. So in September, we as mental health advocates and prevention organizations, survivors, allies, and community members, we all unite to promote awareness around World Suicide Prevention Day, which is September 10th. And all month, we rally around several themes or several ideas, which are ask, be there, keep them safe, help them stay connected, follow up, learn more. So let's talk about that a little bit. Maybe you have had suicide touch your life, your family's life, someone you know. Many of us have unfortunately had to deal with suicide in one way or another. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit in a few minutes and share some personal experiences. But I just want to talk a bit about what you can do. If you haven't personally had to experience this, I'm really glad for you. But every one of us can do our part. And I want to share with you some things that you can do. First of all, 988lifeline.org. Go to that website and look at the information there and share it with everyone you know. That's first and foremost, the first thing that you can do. Start talking about it. Get educated. Be part of the change. So what does it mean first to ask? Research shows that people who are having thoughts of suicide feel tremendous relief when someone just cares about them and asks after them in a caring and thoughtful way. Findings suggest that acknowledging and talking about suicide can reduce rather than increase suicidal ideation. So ask. Ask someone. What does it mean to be there? People are more likely to feel less depressed and less suicidal, less overwhelmed, and more hopeful after speaking to someone who listens to them, but without judgment, of course. So be the one to be there. Keep them safe. A number of studies have indicated that when lethal means are made less available or less deadly, suicide rates by that method decline, and frequently suicide rates overall decline. Help them stay connected. Studies indicate that helping someone at risk create a network of resources. What do we say, people? We say that circle of care is so important. A network of resources and individuals for support and safety can help them take positive action and reduce feelings of hopelessness. Follow up. Studies have also shown that brief, low-cost intervention, ongoing contact, may be an important part of suicide prevention, especially for individuals after they have been discharged from hospitals or care services. Now, we all know that hospital stays are becoming shorter and shorter and shorter and may not be everything that people need. And through the pandemic and after, resources are becoming harder and harder to find, especially in certain areas of the country. So keeping people connected and then following up, ongoing contact, supportive ongoing contact may be an important part of suicide prevention. Lastly, learn more. Get resources, message kits, go to events, learn more at the official website. Download all the information from 988lifeline.org, as I just mentioned to you. Make sure that you know what part you can play. Be part of the organizations at your local schools, your local nonprofits. Do whatever you need to do to be an ally in suicide prevention. Now, personally, I have experienced in my life some what I would honestly categorize as crippling depression after my Elizabeth passed away. And actually, if I'm being honest with myself, even before, while raising my kids, raising a disabled child was, it wasn't just hard, it was life altering and so isolating. I mean, I wrote about it in my book, Butterflies and Second Chances, and I just didn't feel like there were any outlets to talk about it. You were never supposed to admit defeat, never supposed to admit that you weren't the perfect parent. And if you did say anything, there was always this fear that you were going to have your kids taken away from you. There was so much jeopardy everywhere you turned. You never felt safe to be not perfect, you know? At least I didn't feel that way. And there were times when I felt that I couldn't go on, that my kids would be better off without me, that I just didn't know if I could take another step forward. I felt hopeless and helpless. But especially after Elizabeth died, there were some private things I'll probably never talk about. They never even made it into my book. They're between me and God, a few things between me and my husband and God. And yeah, some really, really hard things. But there was life after, and I'm so glad that there were resources available to me. I'm grateful that I had good health insurance and that I lived in an area where I had resources available to me. Not everybody has that. And I was lucky, lucky. You know, when Elizabeth passed away, I thought I was ready for all of this, but I just wasn't. I want to read you part of my book, and then I want to reflect back for you where I am today and how different things are now.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young, I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet, and we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon. Elizabeth was the love of my life. I know most people say their husband or their wife is the love of their life. But for me, I know it was her. Elizabeth just totally got me, and I got her. We spent a lot of time alone together, she and I. She was a good daughter. Even though she was so disabled, she was incredibly powerful in her way and so good to me and good for me. She taught me so much, and not in that stupid, goofy way that people like to say. She really did help me learn about life. For one thing, she brought me to this great profession that I love. I get to meet so many awesome people because of her. After Elizabeth passed, after the parade of people in our house, suddenly everybody was gone. The house was empty. A crew came and took away all her medical equipment. They removed her hospital bed, her medicines, everything. It was weird. Then I had to go to the funeral home and pick out a casket. I couldn't even think. I don't really remember much about it. It felt so surreal. What am I doing here? Picking out a coffin? What am I even supposed to be asking for? All in all, it felt like the longest week of my life. We buried her on Friday, 4 days after she passed. It was raining outside. And I remember waking up that morning and thinking that I just wanted it to rain forever. I never wanted the sun to shine again. It felt right somehow, appropriate that it was so cold out. It was the kind of November cold that just sits in your bones and makes you hurt, you know? When we buried her, I thought I was ready. I was so full of myself thinking about how smart I was that I had made all these preparations and how I was going to be ready when the time came. I wasn't ready. I'm still not ready. In the months after Elizabeth died, in fact, for a whole year after, I was like a dead person, just walking around like a zombie. I still did my job. I connected with people, but it was all a charade. I struggled every morning just to get out of bed and go to work. I remember spending a lot of time that winter lying on my bed, doing nothing, just staring at the ceiling. My husband, Mark, took up the slack in terms of keeping the household running, getting Caroline, my other daughter, back and forth from school, calling in laundry service, having meals delivered. He was amazing. Me, I just couldn't get up. It was like my arms and legs and head were all so heavy, weighing me down. It took so much energy just to lift myself up out of bed, get my clothes on, and get out the door. People had stopped visiting. For them, it was all over. For me, it was still such a difficult time. I couldn't think. Grief is funny that way, how it hits you. It's not always about the crying. It's not like you're in the same excruciating pain and agony that you were. But the grief is still there. It's deep, and it impacts you in other ways. It interferes with your memory, your ability to think and process information. Grief comes like the ocean. It crashes over you like waves, then retreats for a little while, then comes back again. In the same way that the waves reshape the shoreline, my grief would slowly reshape my life. It's a very gradual transition, just like with the seascape, but very powerful. It is the process of becoming something else. At some point, almost a year after Elizabeth's death, I was able to get my footing again. The sand had come back and the tide had gone out. The waves weren't as strong. Whereas earlier I felt like I was drowning, now the ocean was calm and I could catch my breath. I started to think clearly again and to try to rediscover who I was in life and why I was doing what I was doing. But then I started to question everything about myself. If I wasn't Elizabeth's mom anymore, who was I? The relationship had defined me for so long, almost my entire life. I had her right after I had graduated from law school. It had been school, 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 married, baby. My whole identity as an adult was being Elizabeth's mother. Without it, I was lost. I started to perform a kind of inventory of self. Yes, I was an attorney, but did I still want to do that kind of work? Did I want to get another job instead? Did I want to shut my practice down? I was also a wife. Did I want to stay married to Mark? I loved him, but part of me wanted to just sell everything, shed all the trappings of my previous life, and move away with Caroline. I know how harsh that sounds, and I'm certainly glad I didn't do that, didn't act on those impulses. But at the time, I just didn't have anything left. As devoted as Mark had been to me, I didn't think I had it in me to love him the way he loved me. I was struggling just to love Caroline. It's awful, but it's the truth. I was struggling to feel anything at the time. My family, my mom, my sister were there for me during this time, but they also kept a distance. Everyone did. I get it now. It's just too painful. As much as people say they want to help, the reality of losing a child is just so devastating and traumatic that it's too much to engage with. It's a psychological hurdle, and most people can't make that leap unless they've been there themselves. I had known several people in my life who'd lost their children before me. I had been to their funerals. The beautiful thing is that every single one of those moms came to Elizabeth's wake and funeral. They all showed up for me because they knew. They'd been through it too, but they were the exception. The natural instinct is to turn away, and that's what a lot of people did. I was surprised at the number of friends or people I had considered friends who didn't reach out after Elizabeth passed. They were there for me during her active dying phase, and then right after, people came for a while to pay their respects. But then it was all over so quickly. Everybody just went on with their lives. I couldn't understand it. Was I also supposed to move on so quickly? How do people do that? I couldn't wrap my head around without living without Elizabeth in my world. When we had a luncheon at a local restaurant on the Friday morning after she died, the place was packed with friends. But strangely, I don't remember who exactly was there. Many of them didn't stay in my world for long after that. There were lots of cards and gifts. People sent these strange things to put out in my yard, ornaments to hang on the trees, little poems and angels and wind chimes. I smiled and thanked everyone who gave me those gifts, but I didn't want them. I put them all in a box, and they're still sitting in that box. I haven't opened it since, but maybe one day it will be time for me to pull them out. Back then, I wasn't ready. I did what I had to do to put up a brave face and keep up with appearances. But it would still be many years until true healing came. It wasn't until the spring of 2015, the second spring after Elizabeth passed, that I started to come alive again. What changed? The turning point was when I attended a grief group put on by Children's Hospital and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute for parents who had lost their children through illness. The team at Children's had been trying to check in with me, calling and emailing for a full year, but I just wasn't ready to talk or engage. I never answered, but to their credit, they kept trying. Then one day they sent me a note about the grief group. Something about this invite struck a chord with me. I had almost tried something similar in the past, a group that the hospice had sent me to, but when I had gotten there, I couldn't do it. I had stopped and turned around, partly because I was terrified, but also because I realized I didn't want to hear about kids who had died from suicides and car accidents and the like. Those are terrible tragedies, of course, and I feel for the families, but I don't totally relate. They are different kinds of loss. It took me a while to figure this out. All loss is not the same. Also, at that point, I was still just pissed off. Back then, the hospice group had given me a little pamphlet to read and it was just crap. I wasn't in the right state of mind to hear that. And there was a certain value in my feeling pissed off. It made me happy in a way. It was a step in the right direction. At least when I was pissed off, I wasn't numb. But when the invitation to the new grief group arrived, it was the right circumstances and the right time. Don't get me wrong, I was still pissed, and I was definitely the angriest person in the group. I had the roughest edges. But the fact that the other parents had experienced the same kind of loss as me made a big difference. Those parents really touched me. Not only that, but I got to reunite with some of the amazing hospital personnel who I had lost touch with, my social worker and my nurse practitioner. It felt good. Everyone else who had been part of my world, the network who used to help me take care of Elizabeth, was now gone. All the teachers, all the nurses. I had no more Perkins School for the Blind people, no more healthcare people. Everything was just over, done. So to see the social worker and the nurse practitioner felt like a glass of water in the desert. They were almost the only ones left who were still part of my connection with Elizabeth. But of course, there was also Mark. He came with me to the grief group and was able to listen. But it was also the first time he was able to talk and be heard, because he was the newcomer to our situation and the best supporting actor. He never felt like he was able to claim the tragedy for himself. Finally, he was about to talk about it in that group a full year and a half after Elizabeth died. I never knew how he felt. Shame on me. I never asked him how he was doing. And even in that group, he talked maybe 20% of the time that I talked. But I got to have a little window into how he felt, and particularly how hard it had been for him to see me so hurt and crushed by life. That group was so good for him. He got so much out of it. They were able to tell him things that I hadn't been able to say, like just what a wonderful person he was. The grief group changed me too. It was amazing in so many ways. We had different readings every week, and not all of them were slam dunks, but they were always thought-provoking. We also each got a little bottle and would add a new layer of colored sand each week, whatever color we chose. We did this for 3 months. And at the end, we all had these beautiful bottles, a collage of colored sand in different layers, in different colors. The layers were not all the same depth, and they were a little intermingled. But the whole project connected with me, like I was developing my own new shoreline. As art, it was imperfect and always changing. And some weeks the sand would be black, some weeks pink or gray or brown or white. But I always felt like it represented what I was going through during this process of creating my new seascape. It wasn't just about survival, it was a process of transformation. Through it all, I became something different and awesome. And I still have that bottle to this day. Mark did one too, and his sits next to mine. It may have taken me a while to get in the groove of the grief group, but once I did, it was just what I needed to let it all go and talk freely. It couldn't have happened earlier until all the right pieces were in place. But now I had this group that I could really relate to, this tragic club of parents who had lost their children to disease. What an odd kind of community. It's a group you never expect to be part of, and you certainly never want to join. But there it is. Thank God that they were there for me, that they understood and wanted to listen. I didn't have that anywhere else. Healing doesn't come in a linear fashion. Rather, it shows up in patches like puffs of smoke. You catch a piece of it and start to feel whole again, but then it evaporates. There are starts and stops, but like the ocean, eventually the angry waves subside. It marked the beginning of true healing for me. Finally, it was my time. I was ready for it. And I came out of the experience that spring with a renewed passion for my life. I wrote that in my journal as the beginning of this book. And it was interesting because I started writing this book 5 years ago, and now it's been 10 years since Elizabeth passed. In fact, the 10-year anniversary of Elizabeth's passing is coming this November. This month in September is also Mitochondrial Disease Awareness Month as well. And we have Mitochondrial Disease Awareness Week, the third week of September, and we light up for Mito. And we do a day of remembrance for all the people that pass. So you'll hear me talking about that soon as well. And I'll be wearing green that week because that's our color. So more about Elizabeth, and there'll be a lot more about grief, and you'll see me crying it up a lot. But thank you for letting me talk about Elizabeth and talk about my remembrance and for sharing about suicide prevention. There are a lot of people I know and many people out there that I don't who are suffering. Please reach out to your neighbor. Please be kind and caring. You never know what kind word might have an impact on somebody in your community. Be loving and be thoughtful and be kind and have a wonderful day.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.